been thinking about what I would do for this time of year, since many of us make resolutions for the coming year at this time of year. And you look out and the world is full of problems. Some are caused by others. But you know, if I'd be honest with myself, many of them are caused by myself. But how do you deal with them? How do you deal with the problems that come into life? You know, a lot of people have different strategies how to deal with different things. It's so tempting to just ignore the problems and pretend like they're not there. You find a lot of people doing that. In Proverbs chapter 27, Proverbs 27, and in verse 10, Proverbs 27, and in verse 10, it says, "Do not forsake your own friends or your father's friends, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother far away." This is one of the problems that we sometimes have. People have problems and we just ignore them. Don't forsake your friends. If they're having problems, don't ignore them. Don't ignore your parents' friends when they're having problems. You might need help yourself one day. There's a good example in the New Testament with the parable of the Good Samaritan. In Luke chapter 10, we use this parable a number of times for different purposes. But in Luke chapter 10 and verse 30, it says, "And Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers. And they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side." Now, since it was a road to Jerusalem, perhaps the priest and the Levite were in a rush to get to their job or whatever they were particularly doing. But what we notice is they had no compassion. Rather than dealing with a problem that was presented to them, they went on the other side. Have you thought about why on the other side of the road? Kind of easier to pretend it's not there. You can avoid looking at it. In Luke 16. I don't have this one on the charts. I thought about this later. In Luke 16, there's a parable about the rich man and Lazarus. And think about how it starts out. In verse 19, Luke 16, verse 19, it says, "Now there was a rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, and joyously living in splendor every day. And a poor man named Lazarus was laid at his gate, and covered with sores, and longing to be fed with the crumbs which were falling from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores." Lazarus was right at this rich man's gate. Every time the man went out or came back home, he would notice that Lazarus was there. How did he deal with that problem in somebody else's life? He ignored it. He went about his own life as if there was no other problem in the world. If you look at the world around us, there are people who are poor, there are people who are struggling. One of the ideas that when I was doing this lesson, one of the things that came to my mind was Wilson Adams is deciding to adopt 3 children. Now, Wilson's about 5 years younger than I am. Okay. He and his wife are not young. They've got grown children. They're going to Bulgaria to adopt 3 kids. And he mentioned this. He says, you know, people are asking why. He said, there's a problem in the world, and I don't want to ignore it. Now, sometimes if I ignore other people's problems, the temptation is to look at and say, well, I won't be touched by them. It won't hurt me if I pretend like they're not there. But take a look at what it says in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 15. Romans 12, verse 15, it says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. We ought to be touched by other people around us. We ought to care. Because it cuts both ways. If I'm uncaring, then that's just a small step away from being unloving. The other problem, though, is if I ignore problems, they tend to build up. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs 24, and in verse 30. So that passed by the field of the sluggard, and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. We look at a lot of times, and things just build up. They weren't there instantly. It feels like it when you suddenly have to face it. But problems build up over time because people are ignoring them and not taking care of them. In fact, what often happens is people get overwhelmed by problems. And they have a different strategy. Well, if I can't fix everything, then I won't even try. And what we're doing is allowing problems to overwhelm us. Think about it, the Israelites, when they left Egyptian slavery. Back in Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. You know that Israelites, in order to leave Egypt, in order to go to freedom, to their own land, the Israelites had to travel through some really tough territory. And in Exodus chapter 17, and in verse 1, it says, when all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of the Lord, encamped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses, saying, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirst there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, why now have you brought us from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? Some were not focused on the reward at the end. They just said, we're just going to give up. We're just going to be killed out here in this wilderness. You know, a lot of people approach problems that way. If I can't solve all my problems right now, well, I'm just going to sit down and give up. I get young people every once in a while, they're writing to me, and they'll say, well, I'm just going to go commit suicide. It's that type of attitude. I'm just going to give up. There's too many problems. Most of them are caused by themselves. But we look at all the problems of the world and say, if I can't solve them all, just quit. But you know, when we face difficulties and we face trials, those trials make us better people. James tells us in James chapter 1. James chapter 1 verse 2, it says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If you think about it, it sounds strange. Count it all joy when you face various trials. Because the very nature of trials is they're not fun. But you don't look at the trial itself, you look at the outcome. And try to explain that to one young man. Found out he was a baseball player. And I said, well, okay, what about all those laps that coach made you run? Was that fun? Well, no. And why did you do it? And he instantly said, well, that's so I can, you know, we could win games. So I'll be in good health. And so I'll be capable of doing the thing. And I said, yes. And when you're facing trials in life, why does God make you go through all these problems? Why do the Israelites have to face without water? Because they're learning to become patient people so that they might be better people. We look at the outcome instead of looking at the trial itself. We see that we don't have to give up. We just have to endure. In the Hebrew letter, Hebrews chapter 12, and verse 1, it says, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. How could anyone knowingly go to the cross and die? Jesus wept beforehand. Jesus pleaded with God anything else but. Though he said, your will, not my own. How did he go through it? How did he endure it? Knowing the joys set before him. Looking at the result. He endured. You know, there's another strategy, though, that people do. We kind of touched on it when we looked at the Israelites. You can blame other people for this mess. It's so easy to find fault. In fact, complaining is easiest when you're not involved. Let's take a look at Nehemiah. Lightly touched on it in class this morning. But in Nehemiah had set his mind to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. In Nehemiah chapter 4, and starting with verse 1, it says, now it came about when Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. And he spoke in the presence of his brothers and wealthy men of Samaria and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the buried, burnt ones? Now, Tobiah, the Ammonite, was near him, and he said, even what they're building, if a fox would jump on it, he would break down their stone wall. Now I want you to notice who's complaining. It's the people who lived in that land who had done nothing. They didn't help with the work, but they stood by and they criticized other people's efforts. You can't do it. You're defeated before you even start. You're too weak. It'll take too long. You don't have the right material. You don't know what you're doing. It won't last. How many times when churches take on tasks that's the same response? Churches that are active with plans and programs that reach out for the lost, they get criticized. And the criticism usually comes from those who won't do any of the work. And even those who do the most complaining are often the ones who are outside the church. Take a look at Acts chapter 4. The church was growing by leaps and bounds, and the ones who did the most complaining were the Jews who weren't even really involved in it. Acts chapter 4 and verse 25. In a prayer that the disciples made, it says, "And who by the Holy Spirit, through the mouth of our father David, your servant, said, why do the Gentiles rage and the peoples devise futile things?" Why are the other people complaining? Because they're not involved and they don't want it happening. When other people are active, then it makes me look bad. And they don't want to look bad. We had started out, though, with a story in Mark chapter 14. And I want you to notice some things from this book. Mark 14 and verse 3 again. It says, "While he was at Bethany at the home of Simon the leper and reclining at the table, there came a woman with an alabaster vial of very costly perfume of pure nard. And she broke the vial and broke it over his head. But some were indignantly remarking to one another, why has this perfume been wasted? For this perfume might have been sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor, and they were scolding her. But Jesus said, let her alone. Why do you bother her? She has done a good deed to me, for you always will have the poor with you, and whenever you wish, you can do good to them, but you do not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will be also spoken of in memory of her." I want you to notice, it starts out with nobody doing anything. Jesus has remarked several times on different occasions and different ways that he was going to die. He even had told his disciples that they were going to Jerusalem where he was going to die. The ones who complained had done nothing towards this fact. They hadn't done anything at all. They said, well, the money could have been sold. It wasn't even their money. And given to the poor. And Jesus said, well, you always had the poor. They hadn't done anything for the poor up to this point, and they want to use somebody else's money to do it. But I want you to notice what Jesus said one more time in verse 8. She has done what she could. Could she solve the problem of the fact that the Messiah was going to die on the cross? No. That was part of God's plan. So it was way bigger than her. But she found one thing that she could do to ease Jesus' death. You might look at it as a small thing. I'm sure it probably cost her life savings. But she did the one thing that she knew she could do. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, there was a massive famine that affected the region of Judea. People up in the Grecian areas, Macedonia, they were all told about this famine. And I want you to notice how they reacted. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, starting with verse 1. It says, now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that at a great ordeal of affliction over their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. Jumping down to verse 12. So for if readiness is present, it is accepted. It's acceptable according to what a person has and not according to what he does not have. When the Macedonians saw and heard about the need, they gave. Paul said they gave beyond their ability. They gave more than he was expecting, beyond what he thought was reasonable. But I want you to notice what God expects. They had something they could do to help. Now, could they end the drought? No. It was way too big and way too low. But they had something that they could do to relieve their brethren for at least a period of time. And that region had sent out the gospel to them. And they looked at it and said, here's a way we can repay them in a small way. We use that parable of the Good Samaritan. Go back again to it in Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10 and verse 33. It says, but the Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion, and he came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them, and he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him, and on the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, whenever I return, I will repay you. Was he on a business trip? Was he on a journey someplace? Yes. But he stopped to help the man, used his supplies to help him, paid for his room, and said, when I get back, I'll pay whatever extra is there. He did what he could. Could he give him complete healing? No, but he gave him what he could. The solution to big problems is to do a little bit at a time. Don't get overwhelmed with them. Don't say that you have to solve it all. The Samaritan didn't look at it and say, hey, I got to get rid of all the robbers. He looked at one point and said, I can do something about this. In Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon tells us about a small creature, the ant. If you look at the ant, it's not that big of a creature. And yet it's able to survive. And in Proverbs chapter 6 and in verse 6, it says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, no officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provisions in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you rise up from your rest, sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands of rest, and your poverty will come like a vagabond and your need like an armed man." Here's that same phrasing again. What does the ant do that's different? You do a little bit at a time when it's convenient. Now, yeah, summertime's when you want to take a break, and that's when you want to go play. The ant does a little bit at a time, all the time, and it's provided for during the winter. How do you handle huge problems? What can I do right now? Let me do this next little thing, and then I'll do the next one. For younger people, you know, if you look at it, I got a mountain of homework. Yeah. So what's the next problem you need to solve? Okay, when you get that problem, what's the next one you need to solve? Do it a little bit at a time. Do it constantly. Don't keep putting it off. When you look at your life, yeah, there's a whole bunch of problems. So what's the next one you need to solve? Just pick one of them. Work on it. Go to the next one. A little bit at a time. Constantly. And eventually that giant mountain gets knocked down. Paul points out in Galatians chapter 6, you can look at the world and there's so many much problems with poverty, or like my friend who looked at, you know, the children that are orphans. What can you do? There's so much. There's too much to be solved by any one person. But in Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 9, it says, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who are of the household of faith." Recognize the opportunities you have. Do what you can. Help a little here. Help a little there. I can't do everything. But this one thing I can do. In Mark chapter 9, Mark chapter 9 and verse 41, "For whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because of your name as a follower of Christ, truly I say to you, he will not lose his reward." Same points being made here. Every small thing that I can do helps. I try to live my life that way. I can't solve the world's problems. But you know what? When somebody calls up with a difficulty, I answer the phone. I might not be able to do much, but at least they can talk to me. I can give them some ideas. I can give them some pointers. It's just one person. I won't get rid of all the world's problems. But I can do that one thing. In this year that comes up, think about that. Don't look at the big picture and say, I can't solve it all. Look at the small things and say, I can do that. And when everyone here does a small thing, big things are accomplished. I hope you'll think about this coming week and this coming year. But if there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.